And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Biddle with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, also hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to cover two programs today in terms of the upcoming NFL prospects, Western Kentucky as well as Missouri. So stay tuned for that, and then we'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets as we near the beginning of the draft festivities, which will be later this month. What was interesting yesterday is related to the NFC East, Paul, as we tackle some of the latest NFL news before we get into the draft, is Philadelphia Eagles made another trade as they acquired Timmy Jernigan, defensive tackle from the Baltimore Ravens. So the reason I bring that up is, you know, we've been talking a lot about Jonathan Hankins, and he's still out there on the market, but we've seen a few trades now involving defensive tackles as teams try to square away their roster before the start of the draft.
Yeah, that's true. However, the thing that still perplexes me, and I guess it has to do with the asking price, is the fact that Hankins hasn't been listed as taking any visits with anybody.
Yeah.
And so you're right. I mean, there's been a little bit of shuffling going on here, but the only whisper that anybody has been able to ascertain off the internet even is that the Dolphins perhaps wanted him as a part-time player. And that is the only thing I have seen anywhere in terms of even a crumb about Jonathan Hankins. And usually these visits make their way out. I mean, you know,
in this day and age,
yeah,
they tend to.
Yes. So I'm going to go under the assumption that there haven't been any. I don't know what else to say. And so, again, while he's still out there and no visits happening, no talks apparently happening, and, you know, it seems to me the Giants are still very much in play.
Well, I always say no news is good news,
at least
from the Giants' perspective. To me, though, with the draft creeping up, and we talked about how much depth there is at the defensive line position, if something doesn't get done from his perspective before the draft, does that perhaps indicate even better news for the Giants? Because by that time, you would think other teams would fill their voids at the defensive tackle position.
Well, it could. It could. Of course, if the Giants wind up getting a stud defensive tackle in the draft,
they
maybe
fill
first
a void there,
or second round, maybe they just decide that that would be a less expensive way to go. And maybe that guy is a plug-and-play player. And quite frankly, folks, there are a lot of plug-and-play defensive tackles in this draft. It is a good draft for defensive linemen. So, you know, would it be a little risky to throw an inexperienced guy in there? Perhaps. I mean, they've got three-fourths of the front four coming back. So maybe it's not as big a risk as it would be otherwise. But it certainly would be an economically friendly thing to do
from a salary cap perspective. And I think you brought up an interesting point, Paul. If you're going to put a young guy on the defensive line, better they be playing next to Snacks and with JPP and Vernon.
No
as
doubt.
Opposed to you're throwing in a young guy who's unproven with a bunch of other unknown commodities.
Yeah. And quite frankly, also, even if it's a young defensive end, he can be isolated out on the edge. Well, if you're putting the guy in the middle of that defensive line, there are people on both sides to help him out. So there's a little bit more room to grow, if you will, and go through some of those pains of a rookie season, a guy who may not have everything down like he's got to have it down. Well, you can hide somebody, I guess is what I'm trying to say in a nice way, in the middle, a lot easier than you can in the defensive line if he's on the outside.
Especially when you're surrounded by guys that are going to draw attention themselves.
Really good players.
Exactly. And they're going to draw double teams. It would free you up. Less pressure on the young, unproven commodity. What's also important to note is in this draft, you said there's depth at the defensive line, but I think there's also depth, Paul, for players who could be moved inside and outside, which also makes this draft class unique. So if you bring in a defensive lineman, you could say, well, you know what, we can move this player around because we could play him a defensive tackle as well as defensive
end. It's funny you say that. I just got done with the defense now on my film work. All of my defensive prospects, unless somebody else kind of comes to the forefront or somebody asks me to do somebody, I'm finished with all my defensive prospect reviews. And it's funny you mention that because you're absolutely right, Lance. There are a number of defensive tackles who could play either one of those spots. There are a number of defensive tackles who look like they could swing outside in 3-4 schemes. There are a bunch of defensive ends who look like they could swing inside in a sub package and play defensive tackle. It's just a really good crop of defensive linemen, period.
And versatility is always a positive when it comes to evaluating the draft class. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Medow, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live, Wednesday's edition, as we continue to preview the upcoming NFL draft. We're going to focus on two schools today, one of which is Western Kentucky. And right now we are joined by the radio play-by-play announcer of Western Kentucky, and that is Randy Lee. Randy, Lance, and Paul here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Wonderful. Nice to be with both of you today.
Well, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes here. And there are a few prospects coming out of Western Kentucky. Let's start obvious with the big name commodity, and that is Forrest Lamp, who's had experience, Randy, at both guard and then moved over to tackle, where he's mainly played over the last 3 years of his collegiate career. Most people are projecting him to be a guard at the next level, but before we talk about perhaps whether or not he can fit in at guard, do you think he could transition and stay at left tackle as he moves from Western Kentucky to the NFL?
Well, our former head coach, Jeff Brohm, who played in the NFL for a number of years, quarterback, feels he can. But he also felt like he wouldn't get the opportunity to. He felt like due to arm length and height, he would probably be projected as a guard, and that's where he would start his professional career. He's also been working out a little bit at center. We had pro day here last week, and he was going through some center drills as well. So I think most people anticipate that he will be drafted as a guard, and maybe if something happens and a tackle gets injured or something like that on his team and they need someone, they can move him out there on the outside because, you know, at this level, he was dominant there. Did not allow a quarterback sack in either of his last 2 years as a protector on the blind side for two different quarterbacks.
That's the one question I wanted to ask before we actually got to his individual traits. What about the level of comp and the fact that he's going to be making quite a jump to go up against some of the elite pass rushers in the league if he's on the outside? Even if he's playing guard, there's some really good defensive tackles in the NFL who are going to give him one heck of a time.
Yeah, he didn't. You know, we play in Conference USA, so certainly there's a jump up. But I think he won his first-round draft status for what he did against the big schools that we or the bigger schools that we play in the SEC.
Okay.
He dominated Vanderbilt this past year. He dominated Alabama. I believe the stat that Pro Football Focus had out of the 86 snaps or 85 or whatever we ran offensively against Alabama, he won his matchup 83 times. Very similar to the year before. So, we play one SEC school or two SEC schools every year. We play a Big Ten school, and he's been dominant in all of those matchups. Now, he hasn't had to do that at that level every week, but I don't really think anyone, from what I can gather, is concerned about him making a jump from a so-called non-Power 5 league in Conference USA to the NFL. He's that good.
Excellent.
And I believe, Randy, you played LSU in 2015, which was another one of his impressive performances as well. So that just goes to show you the continued theme of how well he stacked up against SEC competition. In terms of his character traits, Randy, how is he in pass protection versus run blocking? Where are the strengths? Where are the weaknesses, if any, that he needs to work on?
Honestly, I have not heard any of his weaknesses. Dominant run blocker, dominant pass blocker. We play a pro-style offense. When we needed yards, it ran behind him. Never concerned about our right-handed throwing quarterbacks. He's always protecting their backside of anyone ever having a hand on Brandon Dowdy from 2 years ago and Mike White from this year. You know, and he's just been a dominant offensive lineman, the greatest the school has ever produced. And really, I don't know that there's any character flaw or any flaws, characterly speaking or professional speaking, other than maybe has short arms. He can't play tackle. But other than that, I haven't heard anything.
They've listed him at 6'4", 309, if I read the numbers that I got out of the combine correctly. What do you think he'll play at in the NFL? Because every college player, when they get to the league, they always want them to get stronger. Now, that may not necessarily mean bulking up, But where do you think his body frame is going to be best suited to play up here?
Well, he can put on some weight. I mean, he's massive right now, but he can certainly probably put on a little bit more. Now, one of the things he does really well, his feet are awesome. He is really quick. He gets that. We pulled with him a lot, so he can get out on the corner and pull. We actually, in the bowl game, we had a play run for Forrest for a couple of years and never used it. Finally ran into bowl play where he threw the pass. He scored a touchdown and about an 18-yarder. So he's just so darn quick and athletic for someone to be an offensive lineman. He's the real deal. Now, how much more can he put on? I was looking at him. I mean, you know, I could see where he put on another 20 if they felt like that was necessary. I don't know how much that would slow him down. Of course, you know, offensive linemen don't run the 40-yard dash. So maybe he does need to put a little bit more weight. But ferocious competitor in his last 2 years. He was the team leader. Usually don't have offensive linemen in that role. But he was the ultimate leader of this football program the last 2 years.
The common question we get asked all the time about guys who may be coming into to the team, people say, okay, well, is he a guard or is he a tackle? That's the first question. The second question is, well, is he left side or right side? Because, you know, in the NFL, even more so than in college, left tackles and right tackles seem to have very unique sets of characteristics, where your right tackle is more of your mauler, your power guy. Your left tackle can be much more of a technique-oriented guy who needs quicker feet. Have you heard much conversation as to which side of the line Lamp would play?
I have not, to be honest with you. I've not heard that conversation. He played right guard for four games in his freshman year when Bobby Petrino was the head coach here in his 1 year here. We were having some backside protection issues, so he moved him in his freshman year after the fourth game of the season to left tackle, fixture ever since. So he's played only on the left side. I guess if I had to grade him, what would he – is it pass blocking over run blocking? I mean, he's great at both. I would say probably pass blocking would be a hair better than run blocking. So to me, that would mean left side rather than right side.
Talking with Randy Levy, radio play-by-play voice of Western Kentucky. Randy, earlier you mentioned that Western Kentucky runs a pro-style offense, and that leads me to the next player of note, who is Taywan Taylor, the wide receiver. When you look at his numbers, they have improved every single season since he joined the crew, which is a positive development. But I guess the big question is his production because of the system that is run in Western Kentucky, or is his production a result of his own skill set? Where would you stand on that?
Visiting with Jeff Brom about that, who wants to be played in the NFL for a number of years, he feels Taywan's strength is the ability, once the ball is in the air, to separate from a corner or a safety. His speed, his ability, once the ball in the air, to go get it, is what separates him from most of the wide receivers in college football. He's 6'1", and a half, 6'2", arms very long, so he plays taller than that. He has great leaping ability. Virtually every time he went up for a ball with defenders on him, he came down with it. He has extremely large hands. Bobby Petrino didn't want to sign him because he was very raw in high school. Basically, he ran an offense in high school where he ran straight down the field, and that's all he did. Coach Petrino didn't feel like he could run routes well enough to be in the system. Jeff convinced him to go to a high school basketball game that Taywan was playing, and so they went together to watch Taywan play. His athletic ability, his ability to go up over the rim and rebound in traffic, he saw the strength in his hands, he saw his explosion. Jeff Rom, who was the offensive coordinator at the time, convinced Bobby Petrino, we need to sign this kid. They signed him. His first year, he was just okay. All he did was run straight down the field. He didn't run any routes. However, sophomore, junior, senior year, that changed. Route running got a lot better. No one ever caught him from behind. Jump balls, they were all his. He was as good as the school has ever had. He's certainly one of the most productive wide receivers in college football. And we did have a wide-open offense. I led the nation in scoring last year. 2 years ago, I think they were third in the nation. And we had great quarterbacks. So we had a great system. Certainly, we scored points against everyone we played except Alabama the last couple of years. And maybe there's some questions about his 40-yard dash time, which I think was good, maybe not as fast as some of the others. Is his route running is the best coming out of college? Probably not. But everything combined, he's a good blocker as well. He's strong for his size. I know Jeff felt like he would have a real shot and would get drafted rather highly and be an NFL player.
That's the kind of guy, though, a lot of times, Randy, who's got to make his first mark on special teams before he actually gets on the field as a receiver, because making a roster, specials is always a big part of it.
Yep, he played, he returned punts, he returned kickoffs from time to time. More of a punt returner than a kickoff returner, simply because Western Kentucky University's kick returner, led the nation in kick return yardage last year. So there wasn't really, you know, room back there for him with who they had returning as a kick returner. But he certainly has the ability, and from time to time he did return punts. I don't recall him covering any kicks in his career, at least his last couple of years. If he did that, that would have been maybe freshman and sophomore seasons. But I know he was a heck of a blocker because the system, he threw a lot of wide receiver screens, and he wasn't always the recipient of the pass. Many times he was a lead blocker.
I got one more guy I want to ask you about, and I understand that he's going to get the medical red shirt and he's going to be back on the team this year, but running back Leon Allen is very interesting to me because before he had almost 2 years of significant knee injuries, this guy was like blowing up the stat sheet. I'm curious as to, and I know he's had some off-the-field issues as well, can you give us just a thumbnail as to what his possibilities are? I know, again, he's going back to school this year from what I read. Maybe you can update us on that as well. But where would he have been? Because I thought a lot of people earlier in his career thought he would be a high NFL draft pick.
No doubt about that. This is, once again, something that Jeff repeated time and time again. Even when the school, this is 2 years ago, when Leon was getting it done, and Brandon Dowdy was the quarterback, and he set all the school records, and Dowdy got all the praise. Leon was the individual that Jeff said was the MVP of this team. He rushed for over 350 yards in the game against Army. He was the most dominant running back in Conference USA. Unfortunately, he suffered a severe knee injury in week two of the 2015 season. So he missed all of that season, was not able to come back last year. He will be back. I don't think anyone knows how good he will be upon his return. We've had two fantastic running backs here who both are in the NFL. Bobby Rainey, who's played with Tampa Bay and is now with the New York Giants, and Antonio Andrews, who's with the Tennessee Titans. They were both very productive here, set all the school records. All the skill sets would have Leon much higher than them, faster, bigger, stronger, better hands. May not have had the heart that a Bobby Rainey had, but he was progressing and becoming more of a, you know, more of a well-rounded individual. Now, I don't know of any off-the-field issues that he's had since, you know, in the last 3 years. I do know there was a setback in his rehab last year, and a part of it, I was told, had to do with Leon not working as hard as he needed to, not realizing how hard he had to work to get that knee back in shape. Mm. So he is ready to go. He's a little heavier than he was when he was at his peak. So I'm sure they're going to try to, you know, get him down a little bit in his weight. But when he was here and was a top flight running back, he was at 235 and 6 feet tall.
Yeah, and I did see a 40. I saw a 40
pass receiver as well.
Yeah, and I saw a 40 time on him at 4.64, and given his height and weight, and obviously he can be a downhill kind of runner. I can understand why with those measurables people would be interested. And as you said, ran for like 350 against Army in a game. You know, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, he did it against virtually everyone. Early in his career, this was after Antonio Andrews graduated. Leon was his backup. I recall a game we were on the road at Fort Atlantic University, and Leon was tiptoeing a little bit for a few games. And he was Jeff Brown wanted to be more of a power back, and Leon wanted to be more of a scat back. And I remember he took him out of the game at FAU, and then reinserted him once the team got inside the 10-yard line, and told Leon, okay, here's your chance. If you're not going to start running hard, you'll never play for me again. And we want you to run north-south, get in and get it done. And he ran over a couple guys, scored a touchdown. And really, after that, it was all she wrote. He finally understood you can dance a little bit, but he's a power guy. He makes one or two cuts, not dancing on the outside and being a little jitterbug. So he became a power back. He was the most dominant running back in Conference USA at that point in time.
Well, Randy, we greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm looking forward to watching Forrest and Taewon in the NFL. I'll be shocked if they don't make it.
Great stuff, Randy.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That's Randy Lee, play-by-play announcer for Western Kentucky, talking about Forrest Lamp, who is expected to go in the first round, projected to be a guard, and then Taywan Taylor, we'll see how things play out with him, a vertical threat who has flashed and improved dramatically in terms of his numbers.
You know, and I appreciate Randy's perspective on this. Again, being the play-by-play guy, not only is he well-versed in the team that he covers, but you know he has also done a lot of homework on opponents. And for him to say he hasn't heard any weaknesses in Lamp's game at all from anybody, that's pretty good. Because that's what we do as play-by-play guys. I mean, I do college games. I know you do, too. When you do that, you make a habit every week of talking to the other team's coach, of talking to the other team, to an assistant coach, of talking to a media guys, talking to PR guys, because you're trying to find out everything you can about the other team, and then also what do they think about the team that you're broadcasting for. Because it gives you a well-rounded story that you're going to use during the broadcast. And there'll always be, you know, a coach, an opposing coach, who'll say, yeah, you know, boy, that left tackle that you guys have, he's just unbelievable. Or, yeah, you know what, I do see that you can take advantage of some things. He said flat out he had not heard of one weakness outside of the short arms.
Yeah, in terms of pass protection and run blocking. I mean, it's like he didn't hear any hiccups or any issues. Usually you hear something, perhaps, or you hear through the grapevine, a scout said this and that. But I think it also speaks volumes of how he's handled himself against the upper echelon schools. That's, to me, the biggest indication that the transition shouldn't be a problem from Western Kentucky to the NFL.
And, of course, Randy has not heard from me yet because I'm doing my offensive line tape on him tonight and or tomorrow. And then I'll let Randy know.
Well, then you'll perhaps have a weakness or two. But his versatility, I think, is going to make him extremely attractive to most NFL teams.
Sounds like it.
If there is a team that says, we need a guard, but also we'd like a backup tackle, we'd like somebody that in a pinch we can move to the outside, he would fit that bill.
I love the fact that he said he was also working out at center.
Yeah, so technically he could really play all three positions. You could have him as
how could you
somebody
not love that?
For depth. Yeah.
You know, that's got to enhance his value somewhat.
Well, and listen, this is all speculation, but those are the types of offensive linemen also that the Giants value. Players that can be moved
yes,
around.
Yes, they do.
Based on who has been drafted and brought in via free agency in the past. That would at least make you wonder if he's around. Now, I haven't looked that carefully. Let me see where Forrest Lamp. I know he's projected to go in the first round, but I want to take a look at
late
some of the
first,
mock
possibly
drafts.
Early second. Most
I'd
people,
be surprised if he's.
Well,
goes
here's
second
the thing.
Round.
Going into Indianapolis, okay, everything I heard was Robinson, Ramchick, and Bowles are going to be your first-round offensive tackles. And if Lamp does sneak into the first round, it's because he's going to be a guard. Now, if you view him as a tackle and not a guard, does that mean he's only a high second-round value instead of low first-round value?
Well, I don't buy that because here's why. The Redskins drafted Brandon Scherff. And then what about what the Cowboys did with Zach Martin?
I know.
And Zach Martin's been compared to Forrest Lamp. And Forrest Lamp, I should say, has been compared to Zach Martin in terms of who they could project at the next level. That's something at least interesting because Martin was a high first-round pick, too.
Well, and what we are finding, and you have just stated some evidence, is that teams are more and more apt or willing to draft a blue-chip guard in the first round if they believe in him. And, you know, I will just say this. It's clear to me that whether or not he is a guard or a tackle, he is the only other guy, at either of those positions who sneaks into the first round. I don't think I've heard
anybody
else.
I would agree with that.
Get in there.
Yeah. 20th, one draft has him to the Broncos. 22nd to the Dolphins. Another draft has him. Let's see where this third one
interesting, the Dolphins are moving Tunsil from right guard to left tackle this year, now that they got rid of Brandon Albert.
They let him go. So, may open up the door, can understand, for a guard in some capacity. I don't see this one even having Forrest Lamp going the first round. Let me take a glance at the fourth round.
Nothing from Charlie on him, huh?
No, doesn't look like
that. Then again, Charlie didn't have Njoku going in the first round either.
That's true. Yeah, this one has him 18th to Tennessee. And Tennessee's been a team that's already invested a lot in their offensive line.
They had a real good one.
But they lost Chance Warmack.
Yes.
So you can understand perhaps the necessity for a guard there. That's the connection.
I'm curious to see what team not only takes Lamp, but what do they want him to play at? Which is why I asked Randy about the weight situation and the frame and where did he think he would fit. Again, I saw him listed at 304. Now, you know, there are a lot of teams who want 320, 330 out of their guards. And 304 is going to be really light for them. There are other teams who will say, okay, you know what? We probably want him to play tackle. Well, if he's going to play left tackle, you could be 305 and play left tackle. More of a technique-oriented spot. And again, he also mentioned, you know, if you're going to put a little more weight on him, how's that going to affect his speed? Well, his foot speed is important if he's playing left tackle.
And you'd want to keep him in an area where, in a pinch, you can move him to another position. You don't want to say, well, now he's going to take a month to get ready for another position.
Well,
here they have him at 309 in this draft, guy.
Okay.
You said you've seen him at 304, mm-hmm. 305. So we're talking about in that 305 to 310 barometer, I think is fair to say where he will wind up. If you're a team, though, that envisions that he could go back and forth in the early stages of his career, you definitely want to keep him at a weight where I don't think there's going to be a long transition period to go from tackle to guard.
Well, let's put it this way. There are teams in the league that want 320, 325, 330 guards.
Yeah.
Because they just believe in mass. They want guys who are just going to bowl you over and just power forward. Now, I'm a big proponent of the power run game. Gee, I guess you never heard that before. But
tell me something I don't know.
But it can be done in the context of a zone blocking scheme, which doesn't require. In fact, you don't want a 335-pound guard because then he is so slow and so plodding, he can't get out and pull and help you out in that regard.
Not a lot of movement.
So he's going to block in a box. That's all he's going to do. So it depends on what style of guy you want. That will make a big difference, I think, for some people as to exactly how high they rank him.
If you're in need of a left tackle, I don't think it's that risky to take a chance on Forrest Lamp either because, you know, as Randy Lee just mentioned, from what he's heard, he could play left tackle in the NFL. The problem is the opportunity going to be there? Meaning, is a team going to say, Forrest, line up on the left side in training camp. We want to see what you can do. That's the big thing. But if you're in need of a left tackle, worst case scenario, you drafted a marquee guard.
Again, and I use David Deal all the time as a great example. David Deal played left tackle and started at that position for a season as the Giants won the Super Bowl. Okay? The Giants won with David Deal as a starting left tackle. I mean, was that his best position? No. Did he play starting right tackle? He did that too. Did he start at left guard and right guard? And he did everything but center. Okay? So, yeah, maybe Lamp is one of those guys who it doesn't matter if it's his best position or not. The question is, if you start him at position X, can you win with him there? That's really the question.
Well, and then I think a step further would be if you bring him in and based on the competition you see panning out in training camp and he is your best left tackle or your
then
best
he
option,
plays, then he plays left tackle.
Tackle. Correct.
Damn straight he does.
Under those circumstances. So that's another factor that I think is important to note. You may not have the choice. You may say, listen, he's our most versatile offensive lineman. He's best suitable for left tackle. We're going to throw him out there. And we'll see what the transitional period is like and so forth. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Lance Beto, Paul Dottino with you here. Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We just wrapped up our summary of Western Kentucky. We're going to transition to Missouri here in a second. And then a little bit later on in the program, we're going to get to your phone calls. We're going to get to your tweets. So we appreciate those of you hanging on the line and on Twitter. Hang tight. But we will involve you in the conversation as we move forward here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Missouri is not stacked with prospects like Western Kentucky, but they have about three or four notables, so we will go over them in terms of their defense as well as their offense, as we'll be joined here momentarily by our special guest who's going to break down the Tigers as we just wrapped up, as I mentioned, Western Kentucky. So certainly a lot to look forward to as we give you the map of what to expect here in the upcoming NFL draft. And we are now joined on the line by Mark Kim of KOMU-TV in Columbia, Missouri, who has covered Missouri football, and we welcome him in here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Mark, Lance Metal, Paul Dottino, Big Blue Kickoff Live, how's everything?
How you doing today, guys?
Doing very well. We appreciate you giving us a few minutes. Let's start with the top Missouri prospects, and I think the best one to start with is Charles Harris, the defensive lineman. It seems as if, Mark, if you look at his 2016 numbers, dipped slightly, not immensely, but falled off a little compared to what he did in his breakout campaign in 2015. Before we get to his characteristics, I'm just curious, did his change in production have to do with the fact that there was a change in head coach as they moved from Gary Pinkel to Barry Odom this season?
I think it's more or less, obviously Barry Odom was coaching that defense last year, but I think it's more of the switch from Craig Kuligowski from D-line coach. He ended up going to Miami this past season, and Mizzou hired Jackie Shipp to take over. And in general, that defense just couldn't really get it together, especially under Shipp, who couldn't really get the best out of his defensive linemen. And I think that with Odom starting to take more control of that defense later in the year, you started seeing Charles Harris's production go up. So Odom says he's going to take more control of the defense this season, plus the addition of Brick Haley. So the D-line should be good, and that D-line Zoo pipeline should not be underestimated. So I think that Harris just – it was a down year more or less due to scheme and coaching, but I think that he's going to be perfectly fine in the NFL.
Well, you talk about him doing well in the NFL. To me, I look at the 6'3", 253 that I see him listed at, and, you know, guys who know me around these parts know that's tweener size for me. You know, that stand-up guy, that outside linebacker who's not big enough to be putting his hand in the dirt and hold the point of attack. How do you see him being used? Is he going to be a 3-4 guy who's going to be a stand-up guy? Is he going to be a stand-up defensive lineman in what becomes almost a four-man line?
Well, with Charles Harris, he's been doing a lot more linebacker drills in preparation for the draft, knowing that he wouldn't exactly be looking, take looks from every single team as one of those 3-4 defensive ends. But
right,
he's really graded out well as a linebacker. And I think that at the same time, he's just so athletic that I think that you can also put him down as a 4-3 when it comes to he's got a great spin move, athleticism. He may not be the most powerful guy out there, but he's a pass rusher, and he's going to get to the quarterback, and I think that you can at least use him as that when it comes to defenses.
When you look at Missouri, Mark, you've had a pretty nice line of pass rushers as they've made the move from college to the NFL. I know you feel as if Harris is going to have success at the next level, but how would you compare him, if anything, to guys like Shane Ray and Marcus Golden? I mean, is he in that ballpark, or is there separation between those two? Did we lose Mark? May have lost Mark here. Not exactly sure. We'll try to reconnect with Mark here on the phone lines for Big Blue Kickoff Live, unless my question just threw things off. But we'll try to reconnect, as I mentioned, with Mark Kim. Appreciate everybody tuning in here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We were going over the Missouri Tiger prospects, focusing on Charles Harris, the defensive end, who has certainly had a knack to get to the quarterback in his last two seasons at
yes.
Missouri. 7 sacks in 2015, and then he had 8 in 2016. But it was 15, Paul, where he had 18 and a half tackles for loss.
Yeah, he's been productive. I don't dispute that at all. You know, I don't know that he fits the Giants scheme, to be perfectly frank with you, but he's going to be much sought after by somebody.
Well, it looks like we got Mark back on the line. Mark, sorry about that. Not sure if it was on our end or your end, but I was asking, I'm not sure if you heard my full question. There's been a number of pass rushers that have come out of Missouri in recent years, and I noted Shane Ray and Marcus Golden, and I'm curious where Harris stacks up with some of the previous pass rushers that have come out of Missouri.
Well, there's word that Harris might be the most talented out of all of them. I know that Golden was a little looked back upon, not sure what his role. Shane Ray was probably one of the most highest sought-after guys from this past few years. And then obviously there's Sheldon Richardson in the past. But I think that Charles Harris has a good combination of that athleticism as well as the power. The biggest issue with him is run stuffing, but I think that in terms of pass rushers, he might be the most well-balanced out of all of them, because I know that Shane Ray, he's got a lot more of that speed, but doesn't necessarily have the finesse move or power moves as much. But I think that Harris kind of brings a good package of all those things.
You know, there's a guy, not necessarily in that category, but an inside linebacker named Michael Shearer, who maybe some of our fans don't know about because he got hurt last year, wound up ripping two ligaments. And I heard that he actually had a good pro day. So, Mark, could you give us an update as to where he stands? Because, you know, he's a thumper, and I know he was going to be thought of well in the draft before he got hurt.
Well, people can't be sleeping on Shearer right now because I think that, like, obviously the injury is a bit of a concern, but Shearer's actually ahead of schedule in terms of his recovery. I got to see him at pro day, and goodness, he was – if he entered the NFL combine this year, his bench presses would have been – within the top five, I think number two or three amongst all eligible linebackers. So he's got power, and as you said, he's a thumper. I really like I said the defensive scheme was a bit of an issue, and tackling in general is just a problem for that Missouri defense this year. But I think that Shearer is also a very good tackler. I think the issue may come with run stuffing. But other than that, I think that Shearer is definitely worth a look for teams that want just what an inside linebacker can do. A little bit of everything.
Yeah. They list him at 6'2", 235. I see a time on 4.74 for him. I don't know if that's the pro day time or a time that was taken unofficially during the season, but he's certainly an intriguing guy. You say the knee is doing better, though? He is looking good?
Yeah, and he's taking precautions. He didn't actually run a 40-yard dash on pro day. As I said, he wants to wait until he's okay. A little bit more recovered. He doesn't want to take those risks as of now.
Talking with Mark Kim, who covers the Missouri Tigers out of Columbia, Missouri, KOMU-TV. Mark, another player of note on the defensive line, maybe not as highly ranked as Charles Harris's Josh Augusta. Boy, what a presence when you look at his number, 6'4", 300. How much does he truly maximize his size based on those characteristics?
Well, he was the run stuffer, obviously. Wasn't in on every single down, but when he got in, he could clog those lanes. And the scary part about Josh Augusta is that since the season has ended, he slimmed down about 40 pounds, and he's still pretty big nonetheless. So he's going to be quite a handful to deal with. And his 40-yard dash time was under about 5.1 seconds, as I said. So take everything you've seen from Josh Augusta last year and up it just because he's a lot more mobile and athletic.
Wow. Was that strictly because he wanted a shot at the pros and knew that at his old weight that was going to be an impedance for him?
He was dealing with some health issues during the season, and so I think that as he was recovering, he was able to shed some weight. And also I think that, too.
Yeah, because I'll tell you one thing pro NFL head coaches really can't stand when guys come in overweight. They get weighed every week. And there are weight clauses in a lot of the contracts where guys get little bonuses when they make sure they tip the scales at the right number. So that's certainly going to be something he will have to deal with if he does make the jump.
Well, and Mark, following up with respect to Josh losing weight, does that perhaps open up opportunities for him to maybe become more of a presence as a pass rusher? Because, as you noted, he was a run stopper, but most players who play that position in the NFL, teams want to have a little bit more versatility out of those defensive tackles. Do you think he has some of those traits where, with a lack of weight, he could actually get to the quarterback a little bit more effectively?
I don't think you'll look at him as too much of a pass rusher, but I think that he definitely has the potential to develop there. As I said, the speed for someone that big is incredible. I think that coaches can utilize that in order to develop some of those skills. And as I said, he's a powerful guy, so maybe you can just push a couple linemen off the ground and make a couple sacks along the way. So I think there is potential there. But if he doesn't exactly get to a passable pass rusher level, I mean, I wouldn't be too surprised by that.
All right. The only other prospect that I'd like to ask you about, it would be an undrafted rookie free agent who maybe in a lesser year for tight ends may have been more thought of. Sean Culkin, I'm looking at the measurements here, and at 6'5", 245, with a low 40 time of 4.65, those seem pretty intriguing for me, that he may get a third-day call as an undrafted rookie free agent and get a chance to walk on somewhere.
And Sean Culkin is a big dude, and I think that he could really add when it comes to blocking tight end. I think he can add there, but he's just as good of a pass catcher. In fact, he was Missouri's fourth leading receiver of this last year, and a team that had plenty of speed to go around. He was one of the most consistent presences for this Missouri Tiger team last year. So I think that undrafted, I don't think there's much of a risk. You get a pretty strong guy at his position, and I think that it might pay off well in certain blocking formations.
Mark, last one for me is the cornerback, Arian Penton. I know he's not necessarily a huge presence, just 5'9", but where do you see him moving towards in the NFL? Is he a guy that can play on the outside? Is he a slot guy? What are some of his strengths and weaknesses as he looks to move up?
Obviously, the size is a bit of a concern, but he's really been adding a lot to his game. Last year, he was the Tigers' best corner, and I don't think anyone can debate me on that one. Complete shutdown guy, but as you said, the NFL receivers are a lot bigger than the types of guys that Penton has faced in the past. Maybe you'll play him at nickelback, probably see him at slot. I wouldn't stretch as far as to put him on the outside, especially against some of those 6'3 receivers, 6'2 receivers, some of those guys that can burn him deep. But as I said, he's been adding a lot of weight recently, so he can start doing well in the past. The run stuff game and tackling in general. So I think that you'd probably see him at either nickel or slot in the future, and I think that he'll serve us very well because, as I said, he has the pass defense skills to really make that work for him.
Yeah, he's been very aggressive when you look at his passes defense numbers, 41 over the course of his career. Well, Mark, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much for joining us today here on Big Blue Kickoff
Thank
Live.
Thank you.
No problem.
All right, Mark Kim, KOMU-TV in Columbia, Missouri, as that is the Missouri Tigers class for the 2017 draft.
So we got two schools out of the way today, Missouri and Western Kentucky, and we will continue again tomorrow as we go through another week of prospect previews going into next week. It's going to be here before we know it, and I have to be honest with you, Lance. You know, I'm a little bit behind on my offensive side of the ball, but my defensive side of the ball is done. And I will say this, it may be even more so than I thought before, not just a deep draft at a number of positions that we have already expanded on. In general, outside of the quarterback spot, I'm going to be honest with you, this is a really good draft. I mean, seriously. Linebackers, maybe not so much, but there's tons of guys in the secondary. There's tons of guys on the defensive line. There's tons of reserve guys on the offensive line. Not necessarily blue chip plug and play starters, but guys who are going to make teams as reserves. There is a ton of tight ends. There are a ton of wide receivers. There are a ton of running backs. I mean, to me, quarterback is real thin. Linebacker, kind of. After that, there's chock full of nuts at every other spot.
Yeah, linebacker, I think, is more top-heavy, where, you know, you can strike gold with maybe the top five guys, and then after that, I think there's a bit of a separation. But
there's no question.
And I noted this on yesterday's show. This is a draft where if you're in a good position, where you feel like your starters are laid out, you can really build up your depth chart, which is, I think, what you're getting at.
Well, yeah. This is a case where, you know, being low, being a good team and being low in the draft – it's not going to be such a terrible thing because you're going to have an opportunity to draft players who will be able to help you and get good players. Now, at the same time, I've been predicting that I think the Giants will make a move up in rounds 1, 2, or even 3, but I think that's because they are so close to where they want to be that if there's a guy you got to have, you got to go move up and get him. But that also says to me, teams who are of lesser overall roster quality will certainly be willing to move down because there are so many good guys who are going to make 53s. If I'm 10 spots higher than the Giants, I'm 5 spots higher than the Giants, and I know I can pick up an extra pick, why wouldn't I do it? You know, in some years, the draft is so top-heavy, and guys will say to you, and you've heard this too, Lance, oh, you know what? There are 40 really good guys in this draft. And after that, it really kind of drops off. Well, then who's going to want to make a deal with you to add a late second rounder or a third round pick? There's nothing there. Most of the positions in the draft this year, you can go almost 4 rounds deep and still find somebody who can give you snaps now. It's a great draft.
Well, but based on what you just said, Paul, maybe most teams are saying to themselves, if there is a lot of substance and there is a lot of depth at all these positions, there may not be an incentive to move up so much in a draft like this. Because why give up assets you can wait on the prospects to come to you?
The incentive to move up is if there's a guy you really, really have your heart set on, if he's an impact guy, like, let's say, Howard or Njoku.
But that's more, I would say, in the first round. I think when you get to the second and the third rounds, you may say to yourself, the difference between the 15th tight end and the 16th tight end.
You know what, though?
May
the
not
Giants
be that much
felt
of a
that
difference.
Way about Collins.
Yeah, but Collins, to me, was still near the top tier of safeties. Wasn't necessarily a stunner that he fell into the second round, but was borderline first round, where when he dropped out, I think most people said, if we wait a little bit, there's no way we're going to get him.
Let me give you a hypothetical. Let's just say linebacker X doesn't get taken in the first round. Giants go through the first round. They don't take a linebacker. They take one of the other positions. They get through the first round. Now they're sitting there again, second day. And linebacker X, let's say Cunningham or Reddick, happen to slip out of the first round. And they're sitting there ready to be taken in day two. If the Giants really think that player X at whatever position they haven't taken in the first round is that good and that much of an impact player and a first-round value, why wouldn't you make a phone call to see about going up to get him, just like they did with Landon Collins?
Well, because I think that that's a good Landon Collins comparison, where those are two guys that could go in the first, early, second.
Yeah, it's no lock their first-rounders. They could slip.
But I think that to me is more compatible with what you were talking about with Landon Collins. As I'm looking at it, if you're in the third round and you're looking for a defensive lineman, are you going to move up 10 spots if you think that you could get the guy that's right below him on your chart, is my point. Is it really worth it since there's not that much of a fall off?
Depends. Depends on, again, how much glitter is on that particular guy for you. If you have your heart set on a guy.
Well, of course. There's always those players that teams are.
And I'm going to tell you something else. Giants are picking, 55 overall in round number two. And then in round number three, was it 79? I believe it is. No, it's further than that, isn't it?
I'll confirm.
My point to you is they're picking really late in the third round. Now, let's just say for argument's sake, and you've heard me talk about Samaje Perine, the power running back out of Oklahoma.
87th, by the
87.
Way.
87. Okay. Yeah. Let's just say they're going through the rounds. First round's gone. Second round's gone. Now, all of a sudden, early in the third round, running backs are starting to go. After the first two guys, Fournette and Cook, are gone, and McCaffrey's gone, the first three guys. Now there's going to be some separation to the next group of running backs. Now, let's say a couple of those guys start going. The Giants are sitting way deep in the third round, and they're like, you know what? Maybe we really like Perine. Maybe we really like Foreman. Maybe they're like, you know what? We really want to get one of those two guys, and we can't wait another 20 picks or so till we go. We got to move up. That could happen.
Well, you're referring to if there's a run on a position, you're saying.
Sure.
But what I guess I still go back to my premise that is this the type of draft, given the depth, even if you're in love with a guy, is it worth it?
Sure
still,
it is.
Even if you're in love
if
with a
guy. If
you
think you're only a couple of players away from being a Super Bowl contender, you're darn straight it is. You go up, and you get that guy because you're thinking he's going to give you some immediate impact right away. And so what about that fifth-round pick you got to give up or that next year's number three or number four? You make that move. Because if you think that, let's just say that there are two power backs who are going to probably go somewhere in those next 20 to 25 picks, and there's another line of delineation between those guys and the next group, you're going to make that move. You're absolutely going to make that move.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Let's head to Twitter here. Carlos at Bronx Bomber 1701. In this year's draft, will the Giants draft a position of need, or will they still go with the best player available at number 23? I mean, clearly, the best player available, that philosophy never gets thrown out the window. But
never.
In a draft like this, based on what you said, Paul, though, if you're the Giants and you say to yourself, we're a player or two away from really making some noise deeper into the playoffs, does the philosophy change where maybe you look to specifically fill that void as opposed to you're thinking more about best player available from a future outlook?
You know, it was always expressed to me that the first question they answer is, okay, who are the best players available in the cluster at where you're up on the board? Okay, fine. Now, second question. If these two, three, four, five guys are all within a hair of each other, now the need component comes in. And you say, okay, how badly do we need the guy at this spot? And that now becomes part of the factor as to who you're going to select. I think when you're a team with the Giants, now where they are, where the window is starting to close, and you're playing now for this year and maybe next year, I think what happens is, instead of maybe that gap between those three or four guys in that cluster being as thin as a piece of tissue paper, now maybe you say, okay, if it's three tissue papers thin, you know, you're going to leave yourself a little bit more margin for, yeah, this guy may be rated 500s higher than the other guy, but we really have the need. Usually the guys in the cluster have to be razor-thin close when that discussion is had and they made the pick. I think this time, it's my opinion, and I'm not in the room, so I don't know, but I would think logic dictates that the guy may not have to be razor-thin close. He's just got to be within the shadow. And if the need then overwhelms the other guy, you're taking him.
And that makes sense. I mean, I think that that's a logical outlook, at least through for the Giants' lens this season, you know, based on where their roster is. I'm looking at some updated mock drafts just to see where people's philosophies have changed. And Lance Zierlin just did a new one. He actually has the Giants taking Dalvin Cook, the running back out of Florida State at 23, which is brand new because prior to that, the philosophy had been offensive lineman and defensive lineman that I had seen in some of these mock drafts. That's the first that I'm seeing where they project Dalvin Cook to go to the Giants.
I think at that's the first pick anywhere in any mock I've
yeah,
seen.
Yeah, I can't
Dalvin
remember.
Cook.
That's why it just jumped out to me that now all of a sudden a running back entering the conversation in terms of Dalvin Cook.
Look, I'm on board with them drafting a running back, as we've discussed. I just don't know that logic dictates it's a first round pick. I would rather have Fournette than Cook, to be honest with you.
Well,
Based on what they need.
And I don't think Fournette's lasting till 23.
No, he's not.
I think that's stating the obvious. And the other thing is, because of the depth at that position, I think that if the Giants did want a running back, they probably could walk away with one in the mid to late rounds.
Well, again.
I mean, let's not forget, Paul Perkins was a fifth-round pick.
I'm with you. You're not gonna have an argument for me on this one.
I mean, they got good value with Perkins, and we've seen it in previous drafts, too. I mean, Alfred Morris, I think, is another good player to reference.
Look,
he was a late-round pick for the Washington Redskins.
If the value is there, and I would register a very strong opinion that you could probably get an absolute blue-chip corner at 23, I'd rather take the blue-chip corner at 23 than one of those running backs at 23. Because blue-chip corners, now those suckers are just worth their weight in gold. And as I've said many times on the program, I'm hearing there could be as many as 12 blue-chip corners taken by the end of the second round who are guys who are going to give you snaps right away.
They're not necessarily going to be projects. And the Giants, based on some of the injuries that have occurred in the last few seasons, they could get use out of a cornerback
if they would draft
one in the second round.
Which is why I was one of the few who actually, even though I said last year I would have preferred the offensive lineman, I would love to have had Tunsil. Of course, he turned out he was off the Giants board because of the other stuff in the folder. When they took Eli Apple, I mean, I had talked about Apple going into the draft. I didn't think it was crazy to pick him. I thought it was a good pick. I think in retrospect, any fan who did criticize that pick right now understands why. He's a quality player. A very good player, as a matter of fact, and should be even better and better and better as the years go on. You can't go wrong taking a cover corner. You just can't. This is the NFL.
Well, especially when, as you mentioned, this is the NFL where it's a pass-happy league. More often than not, you have three corners on the field. But here's the thing. Not only do you need the three starters, that also means you pretty much need three reliable backups, too, in the event that any of them go down. Because if somebody goes down, you're bound to moving maybe somebody from the inside to the outside. For example, if Eli Apple or Jenkins got hurt, I don't think it's crazy to think DRC could move to the outside, and then maybe you'd bring somebody else on into the slot.
That's what they would do.
Yeah. So therefore, if there's a good slot option in this year's draft, it absolutely makes sense for the Giants to go after somebody who fits that bill.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
The more options you have, the better. I mean, that's been the philosophy, even a defensive lineman. I bring this up every single year. I mean, there's been years where the Giants have brought in free agents at that position, and they've still drafted a player. Yeah. Why? Because you just can't predict injuries.
Absolutely. You know, rule of thumb was, many, many, many years ago, you can never have enough good players. Bill Parcells would always say that to us. And that was a funny thing to say because it's so simple and so obvious. But the truth of the matter is, in today's game, it's not just having good players. It's having players at specific positions where the game is now being emphasized. And pass rush is certainly huge in today's game. Cover, man cover guys, huge in today's game. And then on the other side of the ball, let's not kid ourselves. You got to have good offensive linemen or everything else crumbles. Although that's always been the case, to be quite frank with you.
Well, there's been some teams that they're fortunate to have decent depth where if one guy goes down, you have a reliable backup that could come in and help fill the gap. And then there's other teams, Paul, and how many teams have we seen this? And I think this goes hand in hand with quarterback production. I mean, years where, you know, maybe Eli's numbers have dipped, you know, offensive line's been banged up, or the production hasn't been where they've wanted it. And it's not just the Giants. I think that there's been years where, if you look at Ryan Tannehill with Miami, you know, now they've finally solidified. You mentioned Laremy Tunsil. Well, notice how the Dolphins made the playoffs in a year that they finally seemed to work out the kinks, right, on the offensive line. How about the Baltimore Ravens? Joe Flacco up and down since the Super Bowl. Notice the fluctuation with the offensive line.
And hand in hand, offensive line and running game. Yeah. Those two things struggled. Oh, guess what? Ravens didn't make the playoffs. What a surprise.
And we talked about this, I think, earlier in the week. The Dolphins had an established running game this year with Jay Ajayi.
Absolutely.
So that's the point.
The Titans are on the up now because they've got a line
correct,
and a
with DeMarco Murray and the O-line. That's another excellent example. It coincides. The Raiders, too. I would throw them in there. The Raiders invested in offensive line. Derek Carr, Latavius Murray. I know who's with the Vikings now. But this is not... When we talk about the Giants, you can't talk about them in a bubble because a number of challenges that they face are league-wide challenges.
Sure.
Where you could point to a number of other teams that have gone through the cycle where you've had offensive line issues, you've had running back issues, and then the quarterback production goes off or the offensive production goes off, and then all of a sudden you solidify those, then the quarterback and the rest of the offense clicks as a result.
Look, if we were to call somebody right now in Minnesota, they would tell you, yeah, despite Teddy Bridgewater getting hurt, I understand that. AP got hurt, I understand that. But the offensive line is the primary reason why the Vikings went in the soup.
I mean, look at how many guys got hurt on the Vikings' offensive line this past
season. They went through four left tackles.
Yeah, I mean, they were bringing guys off the street to fill in. Didn't they bring in, they brought in Jake Long at one point? I mean, that was the type of season that it was for Minnesota. There's a point where, listen, if you lose four starters, I don't care what your depth chart looks like.
No.
It's very difficult to overcome something like that. Now, you never go into a season thinking we're going to lose four starters, but you're thinking, hey, maybe one of our starters is going to miss a few games. For example, Justin Pugh went down this past season. There was a stretch where he missed significant time, and the Giants then had a variety of different options that they utilized at that guard spot. And fortunately, you know, the Giants held their own, and it didn't necessarily become a turning point of the season.
I will say, thank goodness they plucked Brett Jones out of Canada.
Yeah.
That was a very... very wise and valuable and economically friendly signing because they got themselves a guy who can play center and guard in this league, very studious, works hard, very smart. Nobody knew what to expect when he came down out of the CFL, but the Giants plucked him out of there as a free agent, and it's quite clear he is an important part of their depth chart on the offensive line.
And remember, he was hurt for that first season. He went on
IR. Yeah,
but you're right. The versatility that he showed enabled them to give him reps at both positions so that he doesn't just back up Weston Richburg, but he backs up the other guards. It reminds me of Kevin Booth, Paul. I think Booth is another guy that I would throw out in that conversation. You bring up Deal, and Deal's a great example. But Booth's another one that I think when you look at Giants history, somebody that could play multiple positions. I mean, how many times did they have Booth at center? They moved him to guard.
He played
they
a little tackle one year, too.
So there you go.
Wasn't very good at tackle, but he gave him some snaps.
But you know what? Nobody's expecting your backup offensive lineman to be great at three different positions. But you know what? If you can have somebody that can fill the hole, Sean Locklear is another one I would throw out.
Big fan of Sean Locklear. You know, I can only say this, folks. The one thing that the Giants have going for them right now, and Lance and I have said it before, and if you've missed one of the shows where we went into it, this is a team now that's simply looking to plug some thin spots on its roster. They're no longer looking to plug gaping holes in the dam, okay? They're not springing gallons and gallons of leaks of water everywhere you look. It's not a Swiss cheese roster. This roster is good. They're literally going in there now just looking to polish some things up. It's a good position to be in.
Well, and if you just look back at what the conversations were like at this time last year.
How about the last 4 years?
But specifically, I think it's even interesting. Just look over the span of a year. You're right, about 4 years. I mean, we could go very far back, but you're coming off of free agency where you aggressively filled a lot of voids. But remember, you didn't know whether or not all of those guys were going to mesh well. Mm-hmm. You didn't know. I mean, it looked great on paper, Paul.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that everybody was going to pan out. Now you're entering the draft this year saying, okay, we know what we got out of Vernon. JPP's now locked up. Jenkins, Apple, DRC. All of a sudden, you don't have as many question marks of the unknown. I think that changes how you go about your business in the draft.
So much more comfortable
to
know that you can now go into the draft and have a much more stable footing under which to operate. And so really looking forward to these next few weeks as we finally count this thing down and get to making those picks.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate everybody for tuning in today. The archive will be up a little bit later on Giants.com. Covered Western Kentucky as well as Missouri. So we want to thank Randy Lee and Mark Kim for joining us on the program and breaking down all of those prospects. We'll continue to preview more and more teams as we near the draft. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks for tuning in for Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.